Justice and Drew, 2 hours in the books for this week. 13 more to go. Counting down.
You're looking forward to the weekend, apparently.
Well, you're gonna be here on Friday, so.
That's not saying
short week for John.
Although, since you brought it up in the middle of, did you notice?
This is so gross.
Did you notice at all during the last segment that I was kind of rustling with
no,
my mouth?
I okay, did not notice.
All right. Well, I had another piece of my tooth fell out. So.
Oh, good.
What? Gross.
Yeah, the tooth that needs a root canal is falling apart.
Literally, no one wanted to hear that.
Well, you know, he brought up that I might not be. Well, my plan is to be here gross. Friday.
Please just plan on that. I don't want
here on Twin Cities News Talk. But when I went in this past Friday to find out, which was really cool, by the way, because it was Star Wars Day, and everybody at the dentist office were all in Star Wars gear.
Do you book your appointments specifically because you know that
they're
Star Wars
fans? It was very cool.
I think he goes to a kid's dentist.
And I was also...
That sounds like the kind of place that would celebrate me the 4th.
And then they let me play with a train while I was waiting.
And they gave me a sticker when I was done.
Yeah, they had to do stickers. You don't want to do suckers because that's not good for your teeth.
I get it, because it's a dentist.
I was playing dentistry. It's not a child's dentist. Goodness gracious, they're all just big Star Wars fans there. No, I went in and...
Coincidentally.
Well, because...
Coincidentally, they and also...
A screen toys. Showing Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, you're
they
right.
Let me play
you know
games.
What? You're right. I'm not here Friday. You're absolutely right. You've just cemented that. I'm taking a sick day.
They have bubblegum flavored fluoride.
I went in Friday... Because there was some discrepancy over what we were doing based off of the guy that called me the day before, so they wanted to come in and re-examine my teeth. And when they did, it went from, well, that one for sure needs to have a root canal, but that, you know, its fellow next to it and its buddy below it, they might also require root canals too.
And they might do them all at the same
time. Yeah, so, well, that's what happened. I asked the guy, he's like, you know, because root canals, have you ever had them before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. They're not necessarily, they numb you, and they're not, it's not like surgery when I had the wisdom teeth pulled. They're not supposed to be, they don't have a lot of residual pain.
No.
Right? And so I said, okay. I said, I'm planning on going back to work the next day. I said, but if we have to do the two other ones, what kind of, what shape am I going to be in? It's like, well, you should be fine to, and I stopped him. I said, hold on. I talk for a living. Oh. Yeah, you really have to. Well, we'll find out when you come in on on Thursday how many need to be done.
Yeah, they don't need to do them all at the same time.
Yeah, I know. He basically said if you want to get them all done in one shot, just plan on being here all day. And I was like, well, what if I don't?
Yeah, you don't have to.
I know. So
yeah,
so I just expressed to Drew there's a slight possibility that I might not be here
to
Friday.
Which I said, well, I will plan on that being the case. And then if you are here, that'd be a nice, you know, then I don't have to worry about it. And that you took issue with that.
there was a tone thing happening. I'll just plan on you not being here. And that wasn't what I was
saying. I like it when you're not here.
Oh, that's sweet. That's nice of you. I appreciate that. I just...
Yeah, why don't you take it that way?
Because I take everything that way. I take it all that way. My life is, I take my life that way. Hey, real quick, in the Star Tribune, this was yesterday? Yeah, it would have been yesterday, right? They reprinted a story from The Wrap. And these stories, you've mentioned this many times, Drew, but the headline is this, SNL opens with Alec Baldwin's Trump failing to work things out with real Stormy. So Stormy Daniels was on SNL.
This is my least favorite thing about the Trump era.
Right. Okay.
This is my least favorite thing about the times we're living in right now. All of a sudden, what happens on Saturday Night Live warrants news coverage. It gets news coverage in every outlet on Sunday morning. Stop it.
So
just stop it. This is not news.
And what they do is this. So this is how it begins. Stormy Daniels joined Alec Baldwin's Donald Trump in a star-studded opening skit on Saturday Night Live. SNL trotted out a bunch of celebrities as characters in the Trump administration, including bringing back Alec Baldwin, Ben Stiller, Scarlett Johansson, and surprising viewers with Stormy Daniels playing herself. The whole rest of the article is a complete breakdown of the skit.
Yeah.
That's all that it is.
That's it.
It is word for word, verbatim, of the. It basically is a reprint of the script that everybody on SNL had. That's it. There's no other commentary that the rap doesn't bother and the Star Tribune doesn't either to add any other elements to it. It's just, hey, cold open on Saturday Night Live had Stormy Daniels, the porn star, and Alec Baldwin playing Trump again. If you missed it, here it is for you to read and watch the video below.
I hate this. I hate this never happened during the Obama years. This never happened where they would do it. Well, first of all, because they never really went after Obama.
They had Obama characters, but they were covered. Cool. They were never covered in the media.
Yeah, the people played Obama like, and they played him off as a cool guy. He was cool. He was awesome. You know, he hung out with him. He was really great. But yeah, ever since started during the election when they started covering Trump, this has become something that they treat like it's legitimate news. Like this actually happened, and SNL just sort of recreated it. No. this is a poorly written comedy skit. That's it. This is not news. Stop treating it like news.
Yeah,
and a news story when Rachel and Ross got married. Because this is the same thing.
It's only funny.
That was not news.
Because I'm rewatching Friends, and I'm just about there in watching it. We caught up on a similar note last night. We were catching up on Survivor from last week, and I had it recorded. And we were, you know, when a commercial time came around, and I went to fast forward the commercial, there was a quick promo. This was the last week. A quick promo for the Stephen Colbert Show. And those promos are real, real quick. They're just a few seconds, right? You know, coming up on Stephen Colbert, we've got blah-bitty blah. He'll be talking about blah-bitty blah. Hey, and everybody's happy. It was Michael Avenetti. And it was coming up. Stephen Colbert has a fantastic time cracking jokes with Stormy Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenetti. And then it has the laugh track. Woo! And I'm just like, what? How is that entertaining?
Right.
How is that? Whooping it up with an attorney.
I miss Bob Hope.
Of a porn star. I do miss Bob Hope.
I miss the days when it was Johnny Carson and he would have Bob Hope and Joan Rivers and Jonathan Winters. And I sound like an old man now, but I mean, the late night TV was better then.
Or even early, even not, I don't know how many stages you put it in, but even like peak David Letterman. Before he went and got political. I don't know if people remember back in the 80s, you know, early 90s, Letterman's show, man, he was great. It was funny. He didn't take himself seriously. None of them did. That's the problem with him now. They all take themselves way, way too seriously. You know, I mean, I miss the old Jon Stewart from The Daily Show.
Yeah.
You know, before he got to, when he was taking shots at everybody. It was amazing, amazing television. It was great to watch. And then he ended up sort of going to the dark side and became, you know, too skewed to one side. And they all feel like they're just too important. The only one that doesn't do that, I think, is Fallon. Jimmy Fallon. He
hasn't ventured into that arena yet.
No. Not that I'm aware of. No, he's okay.
I don't really watch any of them, so I can't say for sure, but he doesn't have that reputation, at least.
Yeah, I wiped out a bunch of Jimmy Fallon videos. The one where they do the random song generator, have you seen those?
No.
Where they pick a song and you have to do it with whatever genre it is. So they did like Drake in country, you know? I watched a bunch of those. They're funny.
So good.
They are good.
Have you seen the Ariana Grande one?
That's the one that we were watching.
That one's so good.
She's like a little, she's tiny. She's a tiny
she's
person.
Tiny.
She's like a little sprite. You
big
can put
voice.
Her in your pocket.
Big voice for a little.
True story.
Yeah.
All right, we've wiped out.
Kind of like Nick Zerwas.
Well,
tiny part, not the big voice. Yeah. All right, a couple of local stories for you. First off, before we get to the Minnesota liquor laws, this one comes out of Pioneer Press. For the fourth year in a row, citations for texting while driving behind the wheel climbed during Minnesota's annual distracted driving campaign. Officers, deputies, and troopers cited 1,576 motorists for texting and driving during the recent two-week campaign compared to only 1,017 during last year's campaign. A 54% increase. I was going to read a bunch into that, but I'll refrain.
Yeah, well, we don't know if that's not necessarily indicative of an increase in that behavior.
Right. That was my point.
Yeah.
That was my point.
We don't know. Well, right. I don't know if it is or not, but it could just be, you know, they did a better job of cracking down on it this time.
It could be also that people are aware of the texting and driving laws, and the worst offenders of that have not changed their behaviors, in which case they're more easily caught because they're looking down at their phone and trying to hide it from everybody. There were also 1,880...
2 weeks, though. I mean, in 2 weeks, 1,576 in 14 days.
I don't get the seatbelt violation. There was an uptick. It went from 1,517 to 1,883. Who doesn't put their seatbelt on?
And look, this is a good example of how just passing a law and instituting some fines doesn't necessarily change behavior.
Right.
Right? How long has it been mandated that you wear a seatbelt? How long has it been a law that if you are caught not wearing a seatbelt, you could be fined, you could be ticketed, they could pull you over just for that? You know, if they're able to spot that you don't have that shoulder harness around, they are allowed to pull you over just for that violation. It's been like that for at least a decade, if not closer to 20 years. I'm genuinely not sure, but it feels like it's been forever. Yet still, in a 2 week period, they found 1,883 people that were not wearing their seatbelt.
And it was an uptick from the year before.
Yeah.
Some 300 plus more. Okay, look, this is not a justification for texting while driving by any stretch. So don't take it as such, okay? However, how do you not put your seatbelt on? Who are the people that are getting in their car going, I can't go through the time of grabbing this strap and clicking it in a little thingy.
Way too much work.
How lazy are you?
I have a friend that recently got a ticket for not wearing a seatbelt. And this person, they were like, I don't want to say if it's a boy or girl. But this person, well, they listened to the show. This person was like, they were like, well, I got other things to think about, you know, instead of just buckling my seatbelt.
Wait, what?
No, you don't.
Yeah.
That's not true.
He's like, frankly, I got better things to think about.
That's not true.
What scholarly friend is this? All right, I just got a text.
Mine is occupied with quantum physics. I don't have time to to devote any of my expansive brain power.
I'm sorry.
To pulling over this strap and clicking it in there.
I'm trying.
It just doesn't occur to me.
Solve pie.
I'm trying to figure out the equation to remove gravity from the Earth's field. I just don't have time to pull this strap and do the clicky click.
I'm sorry, if you don't have the time and energy to buckle yourself in, you don't have the time and energy to be driving.
All right, I just got a text. I'm not going to say who it is. I'm going to say, though, the person's obviously listening. So if you want to call in, you know the number. Okay, I'm just going to say that. Okay, I'm not going to say who it is. But the text reads this: I don't wear a seatbelt. Tyranny. I should be allowed to be stupid if I want. Okay. That's not the point.
That's fine.
That's not the point.
And on its surface, like theoretically,
sure,
I will agree with that.
Helmet laws, same thing.
You should be allowed to be an idiot.
Sure.
And not wearing a seatbelt doesn't put anybody at risk besides yourself. Okay, you're not putting any other driver, you're not making the roads more dangerous for other people, you're only risking, you know, increasing the risk of severe injury to yourself.
Unless you're driving so fast you hit something that your body indeed does become a projectile object.
That's a rare
occurrence.
I'm willing to live with that risk.
I am as well. I don't think either of us, Drew, need to worry about either of us having the momentum to become, you know, projectile objects into danger to anybody else.
But that's not the point.
Not the point.
The point is, it is currently illegal to drive without a seatbelt.
It takes that long.
Right. It's dumb to not wear your seatbelt. That doesn't mean I think it should be illegal.
Right.
I disagree with the concept of the law, but it's fine. It's still dumb not to wear your seatbelt. And we've known it's illegal for at least a decade, if not closer to two. I'll look it up. I'll find out how long it's been. I don't know off the top of my head. And it hasn't changed anybody's behavior. That's the point for me, is that, you know, this should be a lesson to those out there that always want to pass a new law. Always want to pass a new law, make it illegal to do this, ban that, fines for this behavior, all in the guise of we're trying to save lives here, people.
In the middle of Drew's rant, I just strapped in every single person on this floor.
Just ran around.
I
accosted them with fabric.
I was was it freedom? I was, maybe I'm missing out. Maybe there's a joy of, no, I can't physically like begin to move my car without my seatbelt on because I just feel like I'm naked walking around in public.
It's just habit now.
Yeah, I just know. I'm putting my seatbelt on.
Why wouldn't you?
Because tyranny, apparently, according to the person that texted me but now has failed to call in.
I'm going to increase the risk of severe bodily injury to myself in order to make a point that literally nobody else is ever going to hear.
I'm not saying
you're having your little one-person protest in your car. You feel pretty good about yourself?
I'm not saying that my opinion of this particular individual has dropped, but
it's changed a little bit.
Well, seriously,
come on, did I get the same thing?
I don't think you did. No, I didn't. We'll see. Maybe they're calling in
651
now 989-5855. Tyranny. Please. The St. Paul Police Department reported the most violations, citing 171 motorists for distracted driving and an additional 25 for seatbelt violations. More citations than any other participating department in the state. Okay, the person texted me back and said they can't call right now, but they will call in tomorrow to reveal. Probably
to reveal?
Yeah. Probably like right around 8:30.
Reveal what?
Who they are. One St. Paul motorist was playing Pokemon Go while driving.
Oh, come on.
Another was using an iPad to reset a password.
First of all, who's still playing Pokemon Go?
My wife.
Really?
Yes. You have no idea how much Pokemon Go she plays. She goes and runs all the errands. It's so great. She runs all the errands now for the house, which is fantastic for me because I can leave the house even less. It's only because she wants to go to the Pokestops on the way to the store. It's a true story. You want me to go? I'll go over to Cub. No, I got it. I'll go. Okay. What do you get? Is there a Pokestop? Yeah, there's a gym on the way. Oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, man, you know what? She's married to me. How can I give her a hard time?
Yeah, you know, they are made for each other.
Just, you know.
Both got their stuff. It's fine.
Both got their stuff.
A third told police that she was addicted to her phone after getting cited twice in a row at the same location.
Well, then stop driving.
I'm sorry. I'm just so addicted. Hold on. Like, if she's going to commit to it,
you want to take a selfie, officer?
Right. Like, we're already at this point. You're already giving me a ticket. Let's just do a selfie, too.
Let's get the selfies.
I'm addicted to my
Snapchat
phone.
This.
Who doesn't put their active seatbelt thing to me? I don't.
Yeah.
Well,
look, if you cannot take a trip in your car without fiddling with your phone, then you need to stop driving.
Yeah, well, you're going to have some words.
You need to make a choice, your phone or your car.
You're going to have some words with the guests we're going to have on tomorrow. The difference between being forced to have to do it, I get that, and then just common sense.
Yeah, no, I would wear my seatbelt if it wasn't a law.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
I would. It's not an inconvenience. It's not a burden in any sense. It's just, okay, if something were to happen, my risk of getting injured has just been decreased.
Although, let's be honest, when it comes to driving my car around, I don't care how many seatbelts you put on me. That thing is so small that if I get hit, I'm done for. Oh, such low hanging fruit.
I know.
The opportunity. I know. Completely missed it. All right, coming up.
Teed you up.
Start reading.
I don't like to do it when it's expected.
Start reading now.
My sex tape.
Oh my gosh. What has happened? I'm so not here on Friday. We have a guest in the studio talking about reading and stuff next.
AM 1130 and 103.5 FM 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. Pleased to be joined in studio by Kevin Terrell. I so often want to say Terrell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pull that microphone a little closer. You have to talk into the mic.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm used to having my headphones on, you know, for work at home, and that has it built in.
Ah, yeah.
That's the excuse.
You're fancier than us.
Yeah.
Well, you said it last week. It was tarot like barrel.
Tarot
like
exactly.
Barrel. That's right. Yeah, I don't know. I'm with you, though. I was like, yeah. When I wrote it down, it was, we're wiping out on this. Startreadingnow.org. Let's get right into it. Good morning, sir.
Hi. Good to see you guys.
So talk about Start Reading Now. We've had you on before to discuss this, but it's that time of year again. So for those that may not be familiar with you and the program, what's it all about?
Yeah, so what we do is all based around research around summer setback and the achievement gap. So summer setback is when low-income kids fall behind over the summer, typically. And the reason they fall behind usually is because they don't read. They don't read because the research shows they, on average, have under one book in the home. So they literally have nothing to read. And so there was a bunch of research around this that showed that if you got kids the right number of books at the right time of life for the right duration of time, you could possibly affect reading scores. And they did that. They got kids a bunch of books after first, second, and third grade. And it had a bigger effect on reading scores at fourth grade than 3 years of summer school at 1/60th the cost.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just it was just reading.
Yeah.
Just it doesn't even matter what you're reading. Just
exactly.
Reading.
Yep. And, you know, some other parts of that are that it's the kids picking out their own books. So it's the sense of ownership and not being told what to do. You get to pick out whatever reading material you want to own yourself. And so what we do is we implemented that program in the real world. We're going into our fifth year. And what we do is we fundraise for $50 vouchers for kids to buy 10 books each at a book fair that we sponsor. So we're at the 30 elementary schools in Minneapolis Public Schools that have the highest poverty rate. So at least 50% of the kids on free or reduced lunch. And we've got about 5,500 kids in the program this year. So we'll reach scale. We'll have first, second, and third graders in the program this year.
And again, the website is startreadingnow.org. And this program is going to start this year coming up on May 21st, all right?
Right.
A couple weeks from now.
Yep.
And you still need some volunteers?
Yeah. So we have 30 schools. We've got book fairs at all of those kind of going all day. Across those 9 days, and we staff all of that. We don't have any permanent staff ourselves, so we staff it all with volunteers. So it's really easy to do. If you've ever run a Scholastic Book Fair, as many of your listeners probably have, volunteered at one, that's exactly what it is, only we pay for it. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to do. It's great for individuals. It's great for teams. We've had companies, you know, bring their whole staff of small companies or, you know, whole staffs of divisions of companies.
You know, and for those that haven't like experienced it in our household, my wife's the big reader, and you know she's always very keen to make sure that especially during the summer that the boys keep up on their reading. And I've seen it happen firsthand. I can see when my own kids when they've gotten out of the habit of reading and the changes that it has, you know, in a negative way. And it's not to say that they suddenly become a bunch of hoodlums, but I'll be honest, I didn't realize until I saw my wife and what she does with our boys and how encouraging she is to get them reading and into books that they want, how big of a difference that it makes. With our 11-year-old, man, he finds a few series that it's amazing when I'll go to bring him lunch and she'll be like, hey, bring this. And I go, what is it? I was like, oh, his new book has arrived. He's going to read it at school. No. He just wants to have it in his hand because he's so looking forward to it. It has such a huge, huge impact. And when they fall out of habit, it has a negative impact.
Yeah. And, you know, so the sense of ownership is a key thing, right, for us. Because a lot of these kids, even if they get books, they don't get to keep them. It's like get it from the library, maybe, right? But you brought up the whole point about series. So we had a girl 1 year that she bought all her books like in 5 minutes, and we said, how'd you do that so fast? And she said, oh, it was easy. I came to this program last year and I bought the first book in the series and I loved it so much I kept reading it. And I asked my mom if we could buy the rest of them, but she said no, because we don't have any money. So I showed up today and you had all the rest of the books in the series, so that's what I bought.
Wow.
Right? So, you know, we talk about creating a culture of reading and learning for life. That's, you know, we're going to measure the test scores and such, but how do you measure culture, right? And so we measure it by stories like that. You know, one of my favorite stories is a kid 1 year, he came back after about 10 minutes and said, oh, can I exchange this book? And we said, sure, what's up? And he said, well, I bought one for my cousin, but she's never owned a book and it's not fair. She only gets one. Right. So, you know, part of what our program does is it gives kids the opportunity to be generous, because 10 books is a lot. $50 is a lot all at once for a first, second, or third grader.
Sure.
And almost every kid immediately wants to buy a book for somebody else. So, you know, we're creating the idea that, you know, reading is something that you can do. Books are something that you can own. And by the way, it's something that you can give away to others and encourage that love of reading and learning.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, it's fun to read and it's good to read and it's excellent for your brain, obviously. But the even funner part is to have that shared experience with groups of friends.
Yeah.
And to all sort of be into the same thing, reading the same books and talking about the same books. And that, you know, setting that up and getting that going would only foster an even deeper love of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, I was always the nerd book guy, you know, book nerd guy in school, as you might imagine. And, you know, so I wasn't super popular, but it's interesting to see the dynamics in the book fair when, there's often like a queen bee or a king guy who is the reader guy and kids know it, right? And if he picks a book or she picks a book, then the other kids have to have that book or series or whatever. So it's kind of interesting to see the book nerd be the king for the day.
Where do you get your books from?
We partner with Scholastic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, we don't have any volunteer or we don't have any employees, right? So what we do is we fundraise, talk about it, and then we organize volunteers and organize all this. And then Scholastic does all of the logistics for us. So if you've ever been to a Scholastic before, they have these giant cases that just roll in and then yep. open up. And we have about 400 to 500 titles, like 6 to 8 cases of those books for kids stacked 20 deep of each title. And they can shop for whatever they want.
Talking with Kevin Terrell, again, startreadingnow.org. It's funny because, you know, on a nostalgia level, my wife, she doesn't anymore, but she used to handle for the teachers in the for my kids' grade school. She would handle all those Scholastic I don't want to call them catalogs that would come out. And she'd handle those for the teachers to give them to all the students. And I still remember every time that she would bring those home, the nostalgia factor of Scholastic and those book fairs when they would arrive as a kid. It's one of those things. I don't remember much from those days, but I absolutely remember when Scholastic would show up for the big book fairs at the school. You know, that was a big time.
My biggest Scholastic book catalog memory is in sixth grade. My teacher came up and she delivered the book that I had ordered in sixth grade. And it was about that soccer team that crashed in the Andes Mountains, you know.
Oh, right.
And the book's title is They Lived on Human Flesh. And she looks at me like, you ordered this book? Oh, my God. It's a good book.
Have you done much research in when it comes to reading and the use of screens and iPad and iPhones now? Have you done much looking into that? Because obviously that's a big growing concern, especially for any parent. I mean, we see it in our household. We've got to go out of our way to limit the screen time that our boys are on.
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't done a bunch of research myself by any stretch. I read other people's research, and there's certainly some conflicting information, if you will, about how screen time can be bad,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I'm a big proponent of real books. You know, I'm hoping there's no real Winston Smith out there, and if there is, then I'm going to have my real book printed in hard copy. I think, you know, as we expand potentially, you know, there's always a request to get to schools what we can't go to, right? Because they're too small for a book fair.
Right.
Or they don't have enough kids that are below the poverty line, whatever the case may be. So e-readers might be a way for us to do that cost effectively. It's not the ideal solution in my world, but I think it's something that we'd look at.
I know my wife, she swears by her Kindle, but it's the old school Kindle where it looks like, you know, the page is very much designed on the screen to look, you know, like a book, and we do the hard copy. Because I asked Melinda, I said, you know, you have so many books for Kyle, you don't want to do them on the iPad? She goes, oh, no. Hard copy, at a bare minimum, I'll go with the Kindle, just because she wants to limit that amount of screen time and doesn't want to keep developing that habit.
I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority here, but I think as long as they're reading, it doesn't necessarily matter if it's a hard copy or on a screen.
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe make it, say it's analogous to, you actually should know how to do long division, right?
On sure.
paper. And so that I think there's value to having real books. And then, I mean, I have an iPhone 7 Plus. Why? Because if I don't have a lot of bad habits, one of them is I have to read. Like, I read the cereal box, you know, 22 times, right? just because I have to read. So, and, you know, the 7 Plus is a good way to read. You know, I can sit there and read, you know, Powerline blog or whatever beforehand. Before I come in here, right?
Well, and I think, Drew, to more specific to the point, it's not a matter of reading the book on the screen itself. It's the fact that he's still with the iPad or the iPhone, and the focus is to get away from that as much as possible and get, you know, if you're going to read a book, then read it, you know, read it on real paper and don't have the temptation or that habit of, again, continuing to be on
the screen. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just old now, but, you know, I think owning a book, a physical product, is different than having 20 books lined up in your e-reader.
Right.
It just seems different, right? And it's part of who you are, right?
It's one of the reasons why I still haven't gone fully to streaming when it comes to movies. It's different in that regard, but I like to have the case. I like the tangible thing in my hands that I can put on the shelf.
Yeah.
651-989-5855. You're listening to Kevin Terrell. StartReadingNow.org is the website. Again, they still need some volunteers. They can always use donations. Yep. You can get all that information on the website. Sign up for one of these book fairs. It's a great experience, and it's a really, really valuable and wonderful program. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing it with us.
Thanks for you guys' support.
We really appreciate it.
We will get to the article. We mentioned it earlier on. Behind-the-scenes debate at the legislature foreshadowing more big changes in Minnesota liquor laws. I kind of hope so. I like the proposed changes.
We'll see. Justice in for...
Speaking of books.
Yeah.
Did you... I'm sure you guys both did. But the latest... the next Game of Thrones book?
I'm done with the books, man.
Oh, are you?
Don't get your hopes up.
I'm not even bothering anymore. I don't care.
I think it was late next year, I thought, yeah, right?
I don't even care anymore.
We've been hearing that forever.
Oh, have you? Okay, I don't know.
Yeah. Sorry.
I read all five of the
books. It's kind of a sore subject for anyone who's ever read any of the books.
I read all five of the books. The last book I did not care for all that much. I think they progressively got... Like, after the third book, it really started to turn downhill. And really just didn't... It's like the show has progressed so far beyond it, and frankly, I think the show's better.
Yeah,
you don't say that very often, you know. And it's not often that a film or TV adaptation of a book ends up improving on it. But I think in this case, the Game of Thrones absolutely did.
Do you think that George R. R. Martin kind of knows that, so he's like just not as motivated to put a book out?
Maybe. I think it's more about George R. R. Martin got paid.
Yeah.
Now he's
right. Yeah. Well, that's the one thing.
Writing's hard.
Yeah,
it takes a long time,
especially the way he does it.
It's Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew, along with Sam. It's I've heard this many times as of late, and I think it's just sort of happenstance, nothing bigger to it, but that people who are well-known writers or who write screenplays, they've been very, very vocal about how difficult a process it is. Like, I've never heard anybody go, I love to write. Like, they always would be like, no, it's a very labor-intensive, thing that you need to do that, just requires a lot of effort and it's not exactly fun to do. And with a guy like, George R. R. Martin, you're probably right, especially with those books. Expectations are really, really high. And if he got paid and his heart's not in it,
I think that is more likely what's causing the lack of motivation to finish this up.
Yeah.
Is once the show took off and HBO, it's one of the most, it might be the most expensive TV show ever made.
Yeah.
And that's part of that is obviously the places they film and all of the logistics that go into, just creating that show. But a lot of it's going into George R. Martin's pocket.
Yeah. Well, look at J.K. Rowling. I mean, she kind of hung it up when Potter was done.
Yeah.
Peace out, y'all.
Cha-ching.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right.
I'm gonna go build my own Hogwarts.
Out of Min Post, after a year after lifting the 150-year-old prohibition on Sunday alcohol sales, Republicans in control of the Minnesota House and Senate are debating behind the scenes whether they'll do much of anything to change the state's liquor laws this year. Mm-hmm. In 2017, several key House Republicans, including Speaker Kurt Dowd, led the charge on repealing the ban, and now they want to continue to tweak state liquor laws. The House liquor bill would move the legal opening time for liquor stores on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 10 a.m. while leaving the 6 p.m. closing time in place, but allowing liquor stores to stay open until 8 p.m. if Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve falls on a Sunday. And even then, that's too... I'm fine with it, but even then, I'm like, oh, we're still beating. Why are you being so specific? Just let the businesses decide.
Why is there so much control coming out of St. Paul as to what these liquor stores can and can't do and when they can be open? I mean, in some places in Uptown, it might make sense for a liquor store to stay open until 10 o'clock on a Sunday.
Yeah.
But in rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, it's a few miles outside of the suburbs. It might make sense for them to just stay closed on Sunday. Let them decide. You don't have to do this for them.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Let's not make that which is legal difficult to obtain simply because of fear and nostalgia. That's what it is. I mean, it's fear and nostalgia. It's, well, that's not the way the things used to be. And there's a, oh, you can't sell it after six because, you know, that's when the gremlins, after, you know, you feed the gremlins at their midnight, the, you know, they get freaky.
Yeah, it's dumb. It's really dumb. I mean, logically, explain to me why a good reason why a liquor store should be forced by state government to close at 6 o'clock on Sunday.
The bill would also allow commercial establishments that make wine or liquor on site, particularly farm wineries around the state, to offer samples of their products as long as they're not also selling them.
God forbid.
The proposal also approves of a number of local liquor provisions for cities like Minneapolis, North Mankato, Hubbard County as well. One of these in here, and we'll get to it in a moment, it's the one from the, where is it? Oh, the Edina location. Of a Restoration Hardware, the California-based seller of high-end furniture, to sell wine to customers as they walk around the store. That seems like a good, you know, the House bill would allow that to happen. That seems like a cool thing.
Just them?
The location. Oh, they have a restaurant on site that sells alcohol.
Gotcha. Okay.
But the business would need a special approval to serve it throughout the premise.
He's very narrow.
Yeah, no. I probably should have read the rest of it there.
Speaking one business.
Of, yeah, what's that? Start reading now? Is that the website?
You know, Ken's brother owns it, so take care of him.
Let's see. Moving through the story. The House takes a very laissez-faire capitalist view of craft breweries, wineries, and distillers, according to Representative Jim Nash, the author of the House Liquor Bill this session. We recognize this is an industry that's flourishing, it's on the rise, and we want to help facilitate its growth by doing what we can to help Minnesota make it more business friendly.
And Jim Nash is 100% right. Look, there are states out there, Oregon, Colorado, North Carolina specifically, that are seeing a boon of tourism around their craft beer and distillery industries.
Right.
And it's because government's gotten out of the way and let them flourish and let them do what they need to do. And people are traveling to these states in droves to go on what they call beercations, where you go and you do a tour of all the tap rooms and breweries and wineries and things like that. I mean, it's been a tourism boon for Napa Valley for generations. Minnesota is able to enter that arena. I mean, the amount and the quality of the beer that's being made here in Minnesota is getting a lot of national recognition. And we could become that if the government would just get out of the way and sort of let this happen and let it flourish even more. We could end up becoming, you know, part of that little small group of states that are seeing a huge increase in the number of tourists that come specifically to try all their craft beers.
Beercation, huh?
Beercation.
Do you get to bathe like in a tub of beer on a beercation?
I don't know why you would want to do that.
I hear that's good for you.
No.
I was
why
serious.
Would you, why would you waste good beer like that?
Yeah. Well, you could drink it while you're in it.
That's gross.
Oh, gross.
Do you drink tub water?
Remember that mystery?
Oh my gosh.
I'm just kidding.
He's probably one of those people that just like plays in the water bathing. And just like pretends his mouth is a fountain or something.
Well, of course I do that, but it doesn't mean I swallow the water. You can do both. Hey, remember that mystery texter from earlier talking about the seatbelts?
Yeah.
Right? Who will be revealed tomorrow, probably right around this time.
Right.
They texted again. If you think about it, the liquor store argument is not much different than seatbelts. Let people choose. That wasn't the point. The point. People like businesses are not dumb. They deserve to choose, not be told what to do. Okay, but you're already being told what to do.
Yeah.
Because you by law, you're supposed to wear your seatbelt. So that's what we're saying.
Yeah,
there's a difference there. Mystery person who'll be on the show tomorrow right around this time. Normally is on Tuesdays right around this time. Mystery person.
I really don't understand why there's such a strong desire to, you know, to pump the brakes on anything, you know, expanding the availability of liquor, alcohol, beer. You know, your availability to go purchase it. It's like whoa. Like, what would happen if somebody bought a 6-pack at 6:30?
Again, it's people like to argue fear and nostalgia. All right, you get back into the article. I don't think the House has views that as controversial at all. This would be the Restoration Hardware story, according to Nash. It's something that encourages people to spend time and shop locally. You get further into the story. The differences on the liquor bill this year also foreshadow a potential push and pull between the chambers on other liquor issues going forward, particularly as several House members tee up other potentially bigger changes to state liquor laws. So one bill that was introduced late this session, that would require a city or county to allow any establishment licensed to sell 3.2% alcohol beer to also sell full-strength beer. That would mean most convenience stores could sell real beer, as is the case in many states. And this is another one of those ones where I just kind of go, why?
Why?
Why? Exactly. Just drink more. It always seems so silly to me. When you go to one of the stores that's only allowed to do the 3.2, and you're just like, yeah, you could be selling so many other varieties here, but somebody has made a choice and said, no, you're not, because you're in this, because I'm at this particular place, I am not allowed to buy this particular strength alcohol.
Yeah.
Because somebody thought that was a bad idea. Another proposal authored by Nash would allow a grocery store to receive multiple licenses in a city to sell beer, wine, and Minnesota distilled spirits. Currently, state law prohibits alcohol in grocery stores, which is why liquor stores attached to a grocer must have a separate entrance and an owner have no more than one retail liquor license per city. This is all just so dumb. It's all just, I know these are things that already exist, but the fact that they exist, it's
all protectionism. I mean, these are changes that are being pushed back or resisted because people want to protect the status quo. This is so much of this is just using government and using laws to protect somebody's market share that they already have. And keep competitors from popping up and cutting into their market share. That's not the role of government.
Nash would also like to allow distilleries to sell 750 milliliter bottles on site.
Oh, no.
And as many as a customer would like. Currently, state law only allows you to sell.
Chaos and anarchy.
You can sell one 375 milliliter bottle per customer per day. Nash said his proposal would even the playing field for distilleries, breweries, wineries that don't have such tight restrictions.
Yeah, so if I go to a local distillery and they have a gin that I'm quite fond of and I would like to take a bottle of it home, I can't.
Right.
I can't because somebody in St. Paul was like, nah, you got to go somewhere else to get that.
Yeah, you.
That's stupid.
Yeah, you would think with all the anti-car mentality that they would loosen up a lot of these. Because you know, you're just forcing people to drive around to get their stuff from other places.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
All right, I do have some good news, though. Okay, at least we're not California.
It's not easy being green.
Got a gone green update.
Having to spend each day the color.
Comes out of Reuters, Drew. There's no question that solar power is entering the mainstream. Is that true, by the way? Is it entering the mainstream? There might be a little bit. Well, I just refuted that because I just questioned it. So, ha-ha. But California is about to give it a giant boost. The state's Energy Commission is expected to approve new energy standards that would, you ready, require solar panels on the roofs of nearly all new homes, condos, and apartment buildings from 2020 onward. Someone getting paid.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of money for somebody.
There will be exceptions for homes that either can't fit solar panels or would be blocked by taller buildings or trees, but you'll otherwise have to go green if your property is brand new. You can't fit how many of these new construction projects are going to include an abundance of pre-grown trees that'll be shipped in and planted around the building so they don't have to go and adhere to the standards. The plan doesn't require that a home reach net zero status. However, it does provide compliance credits for home builders who install storage batteries like Tesla's Powerwall, letting them build smaller panel arrays, knowing that excess energy will be available to use off hours. Don't you think that if, and this is not a push against solar panels, right? They can be very effective, right? If you clean them, if you use them appropriately. But don't you think that if they were so great, you wouldn't have to go and force them upon new construction projects? The new standards are poised to hike construction costs by as much as $25,000 to $35,000. But the self-produced energy, they say, is estimated to save owners $50,000 to $60,000 in operating costs over the solar technology's expected 25-year lifespan. What is that going to do for the price of the building if they're going to sell it? If it's going to cost you an extra $25,000 to $30,000 to have to put this on there, I mean, I know they're arguing that the savings will be offset, but you're going to end up increasing the price of the property exponentially.
Oh, of course.
By having to install this.
I don't care.
I don't care.
It's not coming out of their pocket. Jay in southern Minnesota, good morning.
Morning. About them forcing to put solar panels on their roof, one of the problems I...
Maybe you should put a solar panel.
Wait, there you go. You're back.
Oh, the solar panels got you.
Oh, they kick out power when there's the sun's up, whether a breaker's tripped or whatever. You know, you're putting a kind of a substantial fire hazard on your roof, and they're going to make a law forcing you to do that. I thought we'd like to have our homes not burned down.
Preferably.
I thought it was our choice if we could have our homes burned down or not.
Well, there's an abundance of issues, and I know, and thanks for the call, Jay. I mean, I've spent a lot of time dealing with different solar companies and stuff on a number of different levels, especially with what we do. And there is, for people that can utilize it, and when it's done correctly and appropriately, it can be very efficient. But going and forcing this on individuals is not the way to go by any stretch of the imagination. You can't just go and force people to go and try to use these panels because it's not a one-size-fits-all solution for every single building.
Oh, but it makes them feel good.
True story.
And they get to pat themselves on the back. We were talking a moment ago about the efforts in the House with the to expand consumer freedom when it comes to liquor sales. Quoted in that article, Representative Jim Nash is joining us. Good morning.
Well, good morning, guys. How are we?
Fantastic. Thanks for calling in. We got a couple of minutes left. What was your comment on this?
Well, so the part that was missed, I think, in the article, I'm not sure if you were reading from the MinnPost article or not, was that the House is trying to move the needle in the right direction.
Yep.
And
right.
We're not getting anywhere with the Senate.
Why do you think that is?
Senator Dames doesn't really feel like doing anything beyond Sunday sales from last year. I think there was a person that texted in last week and asked you to ask Senator Gazelka about that, and he referenced the fact that wasn't really a priority for them. And I find that disappointing.
Yeah, these are modest proposals. I mean, this is nothing extreme by any stretch.
No, and not in the Jonathan Swift kind of modest proposal, but modest proposals.
Yeah, very benign.
Yeah, they're things that help bring Minnesota into a more business-friendly approach. You know, the bottle sales for distillers, that was my bill 4 years ago, and my initial bill was to be able to sell 750 milliliter bottles in any quantity on site.
Oh, no.
And
why would you want to wreak that chaos and havoc upon Minnesotans, Representative Nash?
Cats and dogs living together.
Yeah. Sadly, we are out of time, but we will have you back on at some point soon to go further into this topic. Thank you for checking in, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Tomorrow on the show, we are going to speak with Senate President Paul Gazelka, plus Pete Hegseth.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a